Hello everyone! Welcome to another episode of our special mini-series, History Primers, where we introduce various sub-disciplines of history. We hope that with the past four episodes in this series, we have already demonstrated the dynamism of history as a field of study. This week, we dive into another sub-discipline that is wrought with disciplinal tension, economic history. I am Vekal Porha, and you are listening to Podcasts, Conversations on Philippine History, Politics, and Society. Joseph Schumpeter highlighted the importance of economic history to economic analysis. In his 1954 work, History of the Economic Analysis, Schumpeter declared, and I quote, "Nobody can hope to understand the economic phenomena of any, including the present epoch, who has not an adequate command of historical facts and an adequate amount of historical sense or of what may be described as historical experience." End of quote. Similar to social and cultural history, economic history possesses a strong human dimension. In simple terms, this subdiscipline is mainly concerned on studying economic aspects of human life in historical terms. Apart from the usual subjects of economic history like relations and organization of production and distribution, state-industry relations and trade, economic historians also engage with broader issues of social life like economic inequality, social transformation, welfare, labor and employment, technological development, education, among many others. Economic historian Chris Godden of Manchester University distinguishes between traditional economic history at the turn of the 20th century and the new economic history that revolutionized the field after the Second World War. Similar to social history discussed in a previous episode, the origins of economic history could be traced to the 19th century thinkers, specifically to political economists like Adam Smith, Karl Marx, and Max Weber. All of these theorists were historians in their own rights because they employed historical evidence in studying different economic practices and social phenomena. However, the development of economic history as a separate discipline began in the late 19th century when British, German, and American scholars studied the variations of economic developments and their respective impacts with methods derived from the old political and legal histories. By the 1920s, economic history was a consolidated academic field as demonstrated with the birth of Economic History Review in 1927 and the Annals School of Economic and Social History in 1929, also mentioned in our previous episodes. And by 1941, the Journal of Economic History was launched in the United States. In this period, economic historians were interested in doing comparative historical research that sought to make sense of broad economic issues. In the early years of economic history as a distinct academic discipline, historians who had little training in economic theory and methodologies dominated. There were some attempts at quantitative analysis, but economic theory was pretty much ignored in making sense of past economic events. By mid-20th century, new approaches in the field of economics emerged as embodied by the refinements of economic theory that is driven by the interest in studying economic growth and availability of long-term economic data. The new economists of this period lamented the traditional economic history of the earlier period. In their view, the economic history of the early 20th century lacked in quantitative rigor, was largely descriptive, illustrative, and focused on institutional analysis. They also lamented the utter lack of application of economic theory to historical data. From these criticisms rose the new economic history or cliometrics. According to Godden, new economic history focused on making economic history more quote-unquote scientific through scientific method and the use of mathematical economic models and quantitative techniques in studying past economic phenomena. Needless to say, this pivot in the subdiscipline sidelined historians with economists taking their place. Indeed, mathematical methods and other quantitative techniques greatly appealed to economists. Citing William Sewell Jr., Chris Godden remarks that this development marked the move of economic history from the study of the forms of economic life to the historical study of the determinants of national economic growth. Economists who turned to dominate economic history focused their studies on investment, historical national accounts, productivity growth, technological developments, and long-term patterns of economic change. Nevertheless, cleometrics was not spared from criticisms. By the 1960s, historians criticized cleometricians' penchant to the degree of obstruction in their work as a result of their attention to economic theory. Nobel laureate Robert Fogel's work on the contributions of railways to American development in the 19th century was controversial because of his use of counterfactuals. In his book, Railroads and American Economic Growth, Essays in Econometric History, Fogel calculated what the transport system in the United States in the 1890s would be like without railroads. You see, the use of counterfactual hypotheses or the what-ifs is something that economists do to demonstrate the impact of a particular theory by considering what the situation would have been in the absence or presence of that factor. However, for historians, counterfactual analyses are something that is uncomfortably close to fictitious or quasi-history. Aside from this, cleometrics at this period was also heavily criticized because the main framework that it uses heavily subscribes to neoclassical economics and all of its abstract assumptions about resources, prices, production, and consumption. In the succeeding years, scholars proposed the need for a more thorough examination of economic structures, the complex interaction between economic and social forces, and the various rules governing the way people live, work, produce, and consume. Economic historians were implored to take into account other important factors like culture, social institutions, and government in analyzing the historical developments of economies and its many aspects. Interestingly, such a broad approach in economic history was uncannily similar to the ones employed by traditional economic historians before being displaced by cleometrics. The last decades of the 1900s was thus a period of renaissance for traditional economic history. Modern cultural historians of the 1980s further criticized new economic history for its blind use of economic and quantitative methods that drove the discipline to isolation and antipathy among other historians. This narrow methodological framework was seen by other historians as a way to strip historical narrative of its humanity. Nevertheless, despite the serious criticisms against cleometrics or new economic history, the way in which it systematized the field through its insistence on the importance of theory has certainly contributed to the development of the subdiscipline. The challenge for new practitioners would be to strike the balance between the virtues of cleometrics and history, between the important application of economic theory and the emphasis on the human dimension. Economic history, after all, is too complex and nuanced to be left to the economists. The search for balance is best demonstrated in the recent works on economic history in Europe and the United States. One interesting example is that of Joel Mokyr's The Enlightened Economy, an economic history of Britain 1700 to 1850, published in 2010. In this volume, Mokyr went beyond the usual explanation of the British economic development of this period and examined the importance of the intellectual development of the Enlightenment period that enabled such a development in Britain. Another demonstrative work was Gary Cross and Ricky Sostak's Technology and American Society, A History, published in 1995. In this work, historians Cross and Sostak broadly studied the history of technological advancement in the United States by examining the interactions between and among economic, social, cultural, and even military changes in America. In looking at the works on economic history in the Philippines, we might glean on the Filipino historian's inclination to traditional economic history that takes into account the many factors that determine economic life. Of course, Onofre D. Corpus Now Classic, An Economic History of the Philippines, published by the University of the Philippines Press in 1997, is a comprehensive work on economic history that historicized Philippine economy alongside the changes in social organization, colonial state, and other important historical events that shaped the nation. Despite his training as an economist, O.D. Corpus's work was an example of thoughtful integration of economic development in the broader history of conquest, colonialism, political transformation, and social movements. In the same decade, 1999, Benito Legarda Jr. would publish After the Galleons, Foreign Trade, Economic Change, and Entrepreneurship in the 19th Century Philippines, an impressive volume that historicized the economic transformation of the Philippines in the 19th century. Legarda's work was rich with long-run data that demonstrate how foreign trade transformed from the days of the galleon to the days of the large-scale export agriculture that flourished in the 1800s. Nevertheless, Legarda did not neglect the discussion of the social transformation that occurred alongside the unprecedented economic growth of the period in the Philippines as a colony. Another favorite was an earlier work by British historians Jim Richardson and Jonathan Fast entitled Roots of Dependency, Political and Economic Revolution in the 19th Century Philippines. In this 1975 work, Fast and Richardson brilliantly presented the radical changes in the Philippine economy upon its entry to the world market. This work was phenomenal because it touched on the revolutionary ferment, analyzing how the economic transformation both worked for and against the success of the Philippine Revolution for Independence against Spain. Laura Lee Junker's Raiding, Trading, and Feasting, The Political Economy of Philippine Chiefdoms is arguably among the most important and comprehensive works on Philippine economic history as it utilized a broad range of historical and ethnographic sources dating back to 10th century Chinese trading records. In this work, Junker demonstrated the reasons why political leaders in the archipelago, as in other parts of Southeast Asia, depended on trading prestige goods, on personal charisma, and on rituals to hold on to power. The tension in the history of economic history as seen in the past century allows for the continuous refinement of this historical subdiscipline in terms of scope, theory, and method. Finally, the study of the economic aspect of human life in the past is a permanently evolving inquiry polished only through the willing re-examination of our assumptions about the materiality of our existence. And that's it for another episode of History Primer. Thank you for listening, and for your insights, comments, and suggestions, you may connect with us through Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn. If you want to listen to other episodes, make sure to subscribe to podcasts on all major streaming apps. And for more information about the show, you may visit our website, www.podcasts.org. Thank you very much. See you next week. And as always, have a good day.